Heavenly Father, thank you so much for bringing this group of people together, Lord. We just ask that you continue to speak through the speakers, Lord, that you let each of us step aside and let your glory and what you want people to hear be said, Lord. And just the person that needs to hear what they need to hear, Lord, we trust that you'll place that in their ears and in their mind. And we thank you so much in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Well, as I became a single parent many years ago, I wasn't much out to help you be a single parent. So hopefully there's more now. And I developed some different lessons, Bible studies, and there's little blanks. You can fill them out if you want to, or you can just take it home and do it later. You can use it with a group of people if you want to do that. And if your church is thinking about starting DC4K, which you had said you might, on the DC4K website is a page called Parent Zone. And so I write articles for parents, and I just posted this article on there, so you can go online and download it now and use it with some single parents. I have about 10 of them I want to develop. I've got the ideas. I just haven't developed yet. It takes time to do that. So email me if the suggestions or something you want to put in there, and we'll try to get that covered too. So the Lord is my shepherd, but what am I going to do with all these kids? I'm going to read this to you, and I just want you to just kind of lean back and just kind of envision this scripture. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Even though I walk the valley of shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So as a single parent, what do you think about when I said peace of lying in green pasture? What goes through your mind? I go through calmness. Just envision myself like laying out in the middle of a green pasture, quiet, no hustle and rush around. What do you think about it? Peace. Just
peace.
Just peace. A lot of single moms would say sleep. They'd fall asleep there in that place.
I get plenty of sleep.
Oh, that's good. I have a lady this morning said she needs sleep so bad. What do you think about when you hear the words, the comfort of God being over us or in charge of us?
He is.
Does that lend security to you?
Oh, yes.
Well, do you wonder how on earth single parents do without God in their life?
I couldn't have done it.
No, I couldn't either. I don't know how they do it. Psalms 23:4. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will feel no evil, for thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. I started doing some research on the rod and the staff to try to find out what they were. And there's a book, good book called God's Psychiatry by Charles Allen. And he says the rod was used to fight off the wild beast. You know, that's provided safety for the sheep. And then the staff was used to guide the sheep and had like a crook on it. And so one of the things, like when they would be up on a cliff and going on these really hazardous little trails, that they would literally tap the sheep on the side to keep them on the pathway. So tap, 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 tap. So the sheep would know where to go, because sheep are not very smart animals.
No, they were not.
Dennis said this morning, he was so funny when he was giving his talk this morning. So I think if we look at this line of thinking, God's our shepherd, He guides and He leads us, that we can find biblical principles to teach and train our children. We can use this kind of as a guide as a single parent. As a parent, have you ever wondered if you're too lenient? Did you ever wonder that?
Yeah.
A little bit?
A little bit.
Did you ever wonder if you were too strict?
I'm not really strict. I mean, my kids are 10 and 5 right now.
Okay.
So I've not had to...
You don't have to be real strict yet.
Yeah.
Wait till they're teenagers.
No.
No.
Lord help. I got two boys.
You'll do fine. Have you ever wondered if you're too inconsistent?
Yes.
Okay. Some single parents feel like they're too lenient. I worked with single parents for probably about 30 years now. Some are way too strict, unbendable. I mean, this is how it's going to be. We're not deviating. And I think men tend to be that way more than anything else. And then many too inconsistent. My sister was a single mom, and oh my goodness, she would say, "You're grounded for the next 3 months." Well, of course, the kid wasn't grounded for the next 3 months. So what did that teach the child? There were no boundaries. Discipline comes from, when you look it up in the Webster's Dictionary, it actually comes from disciples. And when you think in the Bible what disciples did, that's what we do to our children. We disciple our children. Discipline means helping, teaching, and encouraging. Helping a child learn to get along with their family, friends, society, teaching a child to behave, and encouraging them. Children have to be taught. They don't automatically know. They don't know. You know, I think it was The Sound of Music. There was a song about... you have to be carefully taught as a child. I think that's true. And I think as single parents, we just get overwhelmed and we just try to make it through our day. Forget the teaching, just make it through the day.
Yeah, we miss out on the teachable moments.
We do. But I'm glad you said that, because everything that happens can be a teachable moment.
Mm-hmm. I'm a preschool teacher.
Oh, you're a preschool teacher. Oh, good. These turns will be real funny.
Yeah, so it
you'll know. You've got a handle on it already. Okay, use every moment as a teachable moment. Even when you're tired, it can be a teachable moment. I tell you what turned into many teachable moments for me were apologizing to my children for losing it. That's a teachable moment. And I tell people, not only do you say, "I'm sorry," but you have to ask the children for your forgiveness. "I'm sorry."
I've done that.
Have you? Please forgive me. Did he forgive you?
Like, "I'm sorry. I'm proud. This is why we don't do this," or this, you know, because it was a situation that I just, and he knew I was upset, and I was like, "I'm sorry, I grabbed at you." I said, "But this is not right, and this is why it's not right."
And that's hard to go back and say
it
that
is.
To your child. But you're teaching your child a lot in that moment. Yeah, I think single parents have times then you just fall apart. I'll tell you a time when I fell apart. I owned a child care program, so you can connect to preschool. And I had gone early that day. Some teacher called me the night before. She couldn't be there. I went early that day. The cook couldn't be there. So I had, and I couldn't find anybody to cook, so I knew I was going to have to cook that morning, and another teacher's out. And so I didn't like moving the children. Like, if you're in this room, that's the room you're supposed to stay in all day. I think the flu or something was going around. And so it was just one of those days where everything seemed to go wrong. And I came home that night, and everything in our house was broken. So I got the kids dinner, and they were eating, and they ate, and they were doing their homework, and so I was going to do the laundry. Well, at that time, our dryer door was broken, and we discovered that if the dryer would run as long as the door stayed closed, that the door kept falling open. So we had a bat, and we got this bat, and if you stuck in the door just right, it would hold the door closed, and the dryer would run, you know? So, which is what you had to do. There's no money for repairmen. So I put the clothes in the dryer, and I stuck that bat in the door, and I walked, and just the time my foot hit the kitchen, the bat fell out of the door. So I go back, and I stick that bat up in there, and I stand there for a few seconds, it's going. So just the time I turn and I get my foot in the kitchen, the bat falls out of the door. 3 times that happened, and I totally lost it. It was just more than I could handle for that day, and I picked up that bat, and I started banging on that dryer. It was an old dryer. It was still, and I was banging on that dryer. I just had it, you know? And more than I could handle that day, and my kids come running in there and go, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And they get the door, and Julie goes, "Whoa, Barnes, back up. She's lost it. She's hitting the dryer. This time, back up." And they start laughing. Well, when they start laughing, it kind of broke that. And I said, "I am so sorry." Julie goes, "Better the dryer than us, Brian. Better the dryer than us." And they were just laughing, rolling on the floor, which helped me to laugh a little bit. But I had to apologize to my children for losing it and hitting the dryer. It was just more than I could handle for that day. So we have to look at letting God lead us. There was no green pasture for me that night. When I stepped back, I could find it, but you just get so caught up in the moment. In 1 John 4:8, it talks about there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. And I think people get a little bit mixed up about exactly what discipline is, and many times they associate discipline with punishments. One thing I have learned in working with children for 30 years is the majority of children in divorced homes don't feel safe. And that's one of the big things fear and not feeling safe is a big thing. Well, I think when you physically punish children, what I'm trying to get people to do is just change their mindset about disciplining children, and so you want to teach instead of punish all the time. And the safety issue is really big, and I learned this from Dr. Becky Bailey in Florida, but she says, and you can use this in your preschool, and elementary teachers can use it too, is that you need to say to the children you teach or your own children, I'm the safe keeper. My job is to keep you safe. God's placed me in this home to be the safe keeper. Now, your job is to help me keep things safe. Any discipline situation, almost any discipline situation, will come back to that point about you being the safe keeper. If a child is running in the room, well, what's your five-year-old's name?
Jeremy.
Whoa, Jeremy, I'm the safe keeper. Running is not safe. What could you do that would be safe? You're teaching instead of punishing. What we would always say is, Jeremy, stop that running room. If you run that room again, you're just going to have to go sit in the corner. Uh-oh, I touched a nerve tonight.
I've heard that before.
We don't take time to teach them what we want them to do. We just tell them what not to do. Discipline is teaching a child what you want them to do. So you say, do you see the difference in, Jeremy, stop that running in the room. If you run again, I'm going to have to send you to the corner, to your bedroom, whatever. And you say, Jeremy, I'm the safekeeper. I'm here to keep things safe. Running is not safe. What could you do that would be safe? I don't know. Well, maybe walk, skip. You begin to dialogue with the child and brainstorm what they could do. Usually it's very quick. Oh, I know, I'm supposed to be walking in the room. Okay, Mom, I'll walk. So we want to teach them at that point. Even practically everything can come back to you being the safekeeper. Then you can relate that to God, our Heavenly Father, and the shepherd. He kept the sheep safe. Yeah, and so we have to keep the kids safe. Do you know your child as God knows you? Psalms 139, O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways, God. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. And then verse 13, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I love that picture of being in your mother's womb and the baby and God just knitting all that together. And I think as single parents, our lives are so busy, we tend to forget that tenderness that we need. But you're the only parent. You're the only one that's going to teach them that tenderness that they need. How well does God know you?
Inside out and upside down.
Inside out and upside down. How well do you know your own child? Do you know your own child as well as God knows you? Ooh, tough.
Yeah, probably not as well as he knows me.
Do you actually know when your child rises and when they sleep and who their friends are and how they're feeling about things? Because many people don't. They don't take
feelings,
the time.
I have one that will tell me anything and everything, and I have one that's real quiet and shy.
Is your second one the one that tells you everything?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Second children in a divorced home are second in the birth order are usually intuitive, and they're the feeling child. The first child is the one who organizes and they're a people person, but the second child is the one who really deep feelings. That's my son is like that. And they're intuitive in that they can tell when you've had a bad day, sometimes even before I knew it. Mom, what's wrong? You seem a little out of sorts today. Before I even realize that they just feel what you're feeling. And they read your body language very well. So be aware of that. You're probably familiar with learning styles. Are you familiar? Because of this, I'm going to go ahead and explain a little bit.
Okay.
Auditory learning style is that's a person who learns through hearing. And you have to know what style learner you are and your children so you can help communicate better. So an auditory learner is a child who learns by hearing you tell that child what to do. And if you listen to their words, you can hear it in their conversations like, I hear what you're saying. Now, when you deal with that child, you need to use their vocabulary and their learning when you work with them, especially if they're arguing with somebody else. A visual learner is somebody that learns through the senses of the eyes, the seeing and looking around, and you can hear that in the vocabulary. Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, yeah, I see that. And And then a kinesthetic learner is a hands-on learner and a feeling. You'll hear the feeling words in their sentences. I'm trying to think of an example. They're literally the ones who feel what you're feeling. I can't even think of an example. And they want to touch a lot. So I'll give you a good example of this. I'm a visual learner. For the most part, a little bit of kinesthetic, but mostly a visual learner. So I have to make up lists. I have to write things down. When I sit in a conference, I take copious notes. Because first of all, if I don't, I tend to just phase out. So I'm really active and busy all the time. So I write down everything anybody says. I'm not a good person to sit next to in church because I fidget and move all around. So that keeps me focused, just to write down things down. One time my children and I were staying in the bathroom for a while, and they were young teenagers. I had a big mirror, and so they would just appear in my bathroom in the morning, and that we all did our hair and everything in my bathroom. So we're all, here's me, and here's Brian, and here's a sister over here. So I'm putting my makeup on, and Brian's a visual learner, and Julie was an auditory learner. So Brian picks up the spray bottle with water in it. Okay, get this picture. He picks it up. He looks at Julie. She doesn't say anything, and he sprays his hair. And he gets water on her, and she goes, "Brian, you're getting me wet." She goes, "Why didn't you tell me you were going to do that?" And he goes, "Well, I looked at you." She said, "Well, tell me next time." He goes, "Well, I looked at you." See, to him, looking was, he was telling her by looking at her. But to Julie, she wasn't paying attention. He looks at her, you have to tell her. So for Julie, I told her what I wanted to do. But for Brian, I made up lists and I wrote everything down. To this day, we have to write things down for Brian. And Julie is great. Everything she reads, she knows right away. Everything she hears, she remembers. She has a tremendous... So know what kind of learner. What kind of learner is your five-year-old?
Probably a visual learner.
Most preschoolers are kinesthetic or visual learners. For the most part, the auditory develops later. And then what's your other child?
Jordan.
And
he's 10.
10. What kind of learner is he?
He's an auditory. He retains everything he hears.
That's incredible.
But I think a lot of it stems from his reading problem. He's, we think, dyslexic.
Okay.
He's been around the world.
So he has to hear by auditory.
He has to hear.
Yeah, that's how he learns, is by hearing everything. Yeah. My son is a visual learner, but he probably should have been an auditory learner, and he's had a little bit of a learning problem, but he could not hear until he was almost 2 years old because of the ear infections, and I kept saying, he needs tubes, and but we have a permanent hearing loss in our family, and so when he was 22 months old, they put tubes in his ears, and he went from not hearing to saying complete sentences. He didn't have one or two words. He went from not hearing, not talking, to complete sentences, and so his whole life, the learning has been hard for him, but he does learn. He's graduating from med school next month.
Wow.
So proud of him. He's going to be an anesthesiologist, and he'll be at a hospital in Wichita, Kansas. He got his number one choice. He was accepted. So he's learned how to accommodate his learning ability, and very smart young man, but he does have to study at it. So learn what type of, figure out what kind of learner your child is, and then talk to that child in their learning style. And it won't be nearly as frustrating. If you're a visual learner, you've got to be aware that Jordan, say his name, that he's an auditory learner, so you won't be as frustrated with him. It took me a long time to figure that out with Julie. But because Brian and I seem to get along really well, that's because I wrote everything down, and that's how he made lists. But her, she just remembers it. So just know that. How do you do this parenting thing alone anyway? Well, 2 Chronicles 1:10 says, "Give me wisdom and knowledge that I may lead this people." And I like to tell, and your children are your people. Your children are your sheep. I like to tell parents to develop what I call the step back parenting method. I just made this up. Yes.
That makes sense.
Physically, you physically step your body back. Give me a situation in your home where you just don't know what to do, or you shouted out something you wish you hadn't said. Kids are fighting, or you come home and they're supposed to do the dishes, or
homework's been a thing.
Homework?
He's not doing his homework.
Okay.
Getting it done, and we're having to go out the door to go to baseball or something.
Okay, so you're
I'm done.
So you're on your way outside. You're on the way to go to baseball, and he goes, "Oh, I didn't finish my. You get your homework done," and you expect him to say, "Yes, no, I didn't finish your homework." So a lot of single parents are just, "Why didn't you do your homework? How many times have I told you to do your homework? Da 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 da. You know, why don't you ever? Why?" And of course, by that time, the first time you say, "Why don't you?" the kid, you've lost the kid. So you're just expending negative energy, and you don't have enough energy to expend negative energy. So learn to take a deep breath and step back. It's going to physically remind you, you know why, Jordan? You didn't get your homework done. We have to talk about this later. And you go on with life. And then you come back to it later. Because you're not getting anywhere anyway when you're shouting.
You're going out the door.
And you're going out the door. Yeah, that's not going to help. Step. One man said, "Well, okay, but I may have to step back a mile because I was called last night and my son was in jail." So I said, "Well, you'll have to step back a mile then, but you've got to remain
calm. Stay there and let him mull over what's going on."
Exactly. Exactly. Step back parenting. Stop, take a breath, think about what you're going to say, and step back. Another thing that I think can help us parents, and especially if you're a preschool teacher, is positive motivation. I don't know why it took me forever to learn that. I just didn't have enough energy to spend on the negative things in my life. And yet, everything seemed so negative. So turn those things around. And some positive motivation is you inspire a child at any age toward their best effort. And sometimes we really don't know how to inspire them, but we'll talk about that. Spend time together. So important. And also, what we don't realize is children from single-parent homes need rituals. Children are ritual makers. They make rituals whether you help them or not. So when a parent leaves the home and the home is split in two, those rituals, the children whose rituals are replaced seem to fare better than the ones who don't. So you have Jordan. How old is when his dad left?
Just recently.
Okay. So you have Jordan, let's say, I worked with this little boy, his name was Vance, and one of the rituals they had was every Saturday his dad took him to the video store. Listen to this, what he told me. "My dad took me to the video store, and I would be looking at the videos, and he would walk up, and he would place his hand on my shoulder, and he would always say, 'Son, did you find a video?' And now my dad doesn't do that with me anymore." But see, to the child, that was a ritual. I know, isn't that sad? That mom needs to find a replacement. She doesn't need to do that exact same thing, but she needs to replace that ritual. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Say the dad, this would be simple. The dad high-fives the child every day when he walks out the door at 8 o'clock or 7:30. When the dad leaves, that ritual needs to be replaced. Because rituals are points of connection for these children. So you got to find a way to connect these children. And right now, if your husband hasn't been gone that long, you're really hurting yourself. I mean, you're in a turmoil yourself, whether you want the divorce or you don't want the divorce. Your life is changing right now, drastically, dramatically. And so you need to create some rituals for you and your children so you can connect with each other.
We have a set ritual. I have structure. We didn't. It's like death is never gone.
Okay.
So, and we get along civil to each other.
Good.
And we're working together. But it's when the kids are with their dad that the rituals aren't there.
Right.
What we do in my house is still there.
And you need to, this will be important for you, to develop some intake rituals for when they come home again. Rituals are usually rituals mean it's something that happens at a set time. Everybody knows what's expected of them, and you do it. So when your children come back home again, you need to have something to bring them into the home where there's, when they walk in the door, you sit down and have a cup of hot chocolate, or they put their book over here and you do this, or what, but something that's the same every time they come home, especially right now when it's so new to them. Maybe you sit down and have a cup of tea together. I mean, they're boys, but still boys can drink tea too. Or you have a sport drink or something for them. But you do need to do some kind of ritual. There's a book that just came out called Between Two Worlds by Elizabeth Marquardt. It's really good for you to read. It's about what happens to children in a divorce. It's called Between Two Worlds, The Inner Lives of Children of Divorce. Elizabeth Marquardt, Marquardt. Just came out, and you'll see her on, she was on Good Morning America. She's just a dynamic woman. She's about 32 years old. It's published by Crown Publishing Company, Crown New York, I think. She says, and when we wrote DC4K, we put this in there too, that a child of divorce, in order to say hello to one parent, always has to say goodbye to the other parent. Yeah, that's pretty deep. It doesn't have to be bad, though. It can, if you know and you understand what's going on, you can release the children to their father. It may hurt you. You can be F about, have a good time, see you guys on Monday. Another ritual you might want to develop since you have a good relationship is to call them every night before they go to bed when they're at their dad's, or have them call you. Those rituals are important.
I didn't do that because I didn't want them to feel torn between their dad and myself. So when they're with their dad, I don't call them. If they want to call me, they will.
Okay.
And I'll talk to them. But when they're with him, that's their time.
Okay.
It's too much trauma.
It depends on the child and the situation.
Yeah.
And how, can you know, if they're boys and they're going okay, just make sure they understand they can call you if that's needed, or if anything happens and they need to talk to you, that you're there. And what you may find as you go through, I really encourage single parents not to date. I know, but you have a lot that just want to start dating immediately. You know, you need to concentrate on getting yourself healed, and you need to concentrate on raising your children. You have a 10-year-old. The longest you have him to influence him is 6 years. That is it. Your parenting is really done by the time they're about 14 or 15. All the values you want instilled in them are really there. It's just a matter of guiding them and moderating them. So really concentrate on your kids during this time, and you'll be happier in the long run when your kids get older. I once had a lady who had 10 children. She was a single mom. 10. And she said, from the time my youngest one graduates from high school, from the time my first child graduated from high school till my youngest child graduates in high school, it'll be 38 years. That's how long she's going to be single parent. She's like right in the middle. She said, but if I live to be 70 or 80, that's still the only half. I still have a half a life yet to live. So she was concentrating on raising her children. Bless her heart. I don't know how she did that. But so develop some rituals where your kids feel comfortable. And maybe a ritual would be that they write their dad a note every night and then give it to him when they go to see him, or something like that, journaling, whatever. One lady in Texas, after she took my class, she emailed me. She says, I developed the dream water ritual. That's what it was. Dream water. What's dream water? Every day when she goes to pick up her child at school, she takes a bottle of water. She stops a quick drink, she gets a bottle of water for her and her daughter. And she said, at first, I was just doing it because I was thirsty and I was stressed out. And then we started talking about water dreams. And so now we call it the dream water. And so she said, every day I pick her up and we drink and we talk about it. That's the ritual they've created. Well, the grandmother had to pick up the daughter one day. She goes, now, Susie, grandma's going to pick you up today. And the little girl goes, make sure she brings my dream water with her. So they carried it. And that was okay. That helped the little girl feel safe and comfortable for that ritual to be carried on by another person. So those are important things. Another thing you might think about doing is as a single parent, is think about any successful single parent you know. Do you know any successful single parents? Watch them and write down what makes them successful. Maybe you don't know any. Maybe you need to think about some. Write down what makes them successful. Talk to them. Talk to each other. Connect with each other. It's important for single parents to connect with each other. See, God never intended us to raise our children alone. That was not God's original intention. And even as a single parent, you don't have to raise your child alone. If you're in the church should step up and help you raise that child. To me, every child that graduates from high school that is from a single parent home, the whole church should be standing behind them. It doesn't happen, but they should be. I've gone to countless band concerts and track meets and by myself. And I didn't go to a lot that I should have gone to. I just couldn't bear to go sit by myself at the football games, at the track meets. It was so hard to go and sit by yourself. It doesn't bother you. You know, my children's father traveled a lot when we were married. And I could go when I was married and he wasn't there and he was traveling. But something about once I became divorced, it was harder to go. Nobody knew the difference. It was just me knowing the difference. It was just something about sitting there alone. So I had to learn how to do that. I can even go to a restaurant now and sit down and eat by myself. I couldn't for a long time. That when you travel, you have to do those things. And now I can do it and it doesn't bother me. But how do you parent alone? One of the things we need to learn to do is to set boundaries. So I'm going to take in a little trip here. Let's say you have an appointment and you have to go out in the car at nighttime. Turn my page here. And you're going to go and it's dark and it's starting to rain, and there's two ways you can go. The first road you can go on has clearly defined stripes down the middle. So you know exactly where the middle is. And you drive up on a high cliff and there's the guardrails. So you know there's a steep embankment, but you see the guardrails. That's going to guide you. And then there's a sign that says curve. So you know you're going to curve. And then there's a speed limit sign. And if you go to the speed limit, you're more than likely going to be okay. And then there's a no passing zone. And you drive a little bit more. And then you're going to be coming to an intersection. And so they put a sign up. You know, there's going to be a stop sign up here or a stoplight. So you begin to slow down. Those are your boundaries. Those are your signs that are going to help you get from point A to point B. So you go through the country a little bit, you come to the stop sign, you stop, and then you're going to go a little further and you're going to turn right, and you know where you are. There's a street sign that says this is such and such street, and there's the numbers. So those are your boundaries. Now the second road is a little bit different. You start up this road and the center line is all faded. And it's dark and it's raining and you're not quite sure where that center line is. And you go up the steep hill and there's this embankment, but there's no guardrail. And you're really nervous about, you know, am I going to go up the road? There's no boundaries. You're driving along pretty fast and there's a curve and you don't know there's a curve, and there's no sign to tell you a curve. And then you're driving along and all of a sudden you're in front of a stoplight. There's not been anything to give you a sign or a notice that there's a stop sign coming up. You got to find the street you're supposed to turn on. You can't find the street sign. If you turn, there's no... Do you see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Which road do you want to travel on late at night? The one with boundaries, the ones that's clearly marked. Children are the same way. Children have to have boundaries. They need boundaries to feel safe. They have to know what their expectations are, what's going to happen, what's to come, and where they're going. And we forget to do boundaries with children. What age preschool kids do you teach?
3 and 4 year olds.
They particularly need boundaries set up, or they'll hurt themselves. God put us in charge of these children for a reason. So, think of your boundaries for your children. Now, we can do a whole workshop on boundaries. I don't want to do a whole workshop on boundaries, but I just want to talk a little bit because, see, God gives us boundaries. When you think about the shepherd tapping those, that was a boundary for those sheep up on the high cliff so they knew where they were supposed to go. God gives us boundaries, and He gives us rules to live by. He doesn't force us to do those rules, but He gives us the rules. Some of the consequences are pretty steep if we don't follow the rules. And then we have a free will. Well, children are the same way. And children in single-parent homes need boundaries. They still have a free will. You have to be in charge in your home. That doesn't mean you're in total control, but you have to be in charge in your home. I've seen a lot of single parent homes where everything was total chaos. You don't seem like you're the person that's going to be like that. What a lot of people don't realize in chaotic homes is children's brains look for patterns. Chaos becomes the pattern in their brain. They take that chaos to school. They take it to their jobs. Chaos becomes a way of life for them, and they can't focus in. So even thinking about your home, what's in your home, how organized is your home? I mean, do children have a certain place to put their clothes? Do they hang them up? They don't hang them up, but they know where they're supposed to hang them up. Okay, so you have to have boundaries and rules and then allow the child to make the choice. And then that brings us to consequences. I think we need consequences in our home, and there's two kinds of consequences, and you probably know this, but there's natural consequences and logical consequences. A natural consequence is what happens naturally because of something. So it's wintertime, and I go outside without a coat. The natural consequence is I'm going to get cold. Right. Sometimes you can let the children suffer the natural consequence. Sometimes consequences are good. It doesn't have to be bad. But sometimes you have to set a logical consequence, and that's where you step in as adult if something's not safe, and you set a logical consequence for that. So figure out whether you need a natural consequence or logical consequence, and then let the children reap that consequence. A lot of single parents rescue their children too much, or they let the consequence go. I'm trying to think of here's
laundry in the laundry basket.
Do what?
Laundry in the laundry basket.
Laundry in the...
If it's not there, it doesn't get done.
Exactly.
If it doesn't get done, you don't have any clean underwear.
That's exactly right. When my children were... right after Dad left, they were 8 and 12, and my wife got really hectic, so I said, you guys are going to have to start doing your own laundry. And I took them downstairs, and I go, this is called the washing machine, and this is called the dryer. And they go, Mom, we know that. I go, just listen to me, humor me. You always need to use that phrase, humor me. I showed them how to separate their clothes, whites here, darks here. I showed them how to operate the washing machine, how to operate the dryer. So you need to pay attention while I'm telling you, because from this point on, you're doing your own laundry. So I said, okay, starting tomorrow, you're doing your own laundry. I'll do the towels. I'll do the sheets. I'll do anything that we all use. But your own laundry, you're going to be responsible for. So my son, he gets right in there. Actually, I had to get on to him because he's like washing a pair of underwear and a pair of shorts. You know, so I forgot to tell you, son, we only do a load at a time, not one thing, you know. But he was so conscientious. Well, we go for a whole week. My daughter never does her laundry. We go for 2 weeks, doesn't do her laundry. And a consequence only works if the parent keeps their mouth shut. So she is 12. She could figure this out. I wanted to step in there and do her laundry, remind her, not that, no, I have to let her do this on her own. So she goes for a couple of weeks, and her clothes are starting to look pretty ratty. And she said, Mom, my friends are starting to tell me I smell. I go, well, what does that tell you? I need to do my laundry. I think so. So one night she comes home. She goes, okay, I've got to do my laundry. I have nothing else to wear. And she stuffs all these clothes, all different colors, in one load. Big, massive load. And she leaves in there, and she goes to bed, and they're in the washing machine. And it's getting winter outside. It's like October, I think, in November. So I wanted to go put those clothes in the dryer so bad, but I thought, no, I have got to stay out. This is the lesson she has to learn. So the next morning, she slept late. She goes, oh, Mom, did you put my clothes in the dryer? I go, no, that wasn't my responsibility, Julie. Oh, no, I don't have any dry clothes. I better get them in the dryer. So she stuffs all the clothes in the dryer, her jeans, everything. Well, it just so happened that morning had turned really cold in Oklahoma. You know, it's one of those miracles that God provided on that one morning to make it cold. So her bus is coming. We live like a mile in an addition. And so her bus came at a certain time. She runs in there and she grabs her jeans. And she stood out at the bus stop in a cold, cold morning with jeans that were damp on the inseams and the waist was wet and the jeans weren't dry. That was her consequence. I did not step up. I didn't take her to school. She had to reap the consequence of her action, not doing her laundry. So she was pretty conscientious about getting things in the dryer the night before, but some of her clothes turned gray, so she had to learn how to separate her clothes out and do those things. So teaching your children through the use of consequences, I think, is really valuable. But don't use consequences if you can't keep your mouth shut. And there's one really important word you need to write down, especially if you're parenting boys. This is the most important word you're going to learn in your whole single-parent career, and that is, are you ready? I'm serious. You need to write this word down. This is a word you're going to use the consequences all the time. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Bummer.
Bummer.
Bummer conveys empathy and sympathy, but it doesn't take ownership of the problem. Julie's got wet jeans, and I go, oh, bummer. Okay, I sympathize with her, but there's nothing I can do about it. I can't even tell you the times I've used bummer. When I had my therapeutic child care, we used bummer a lot. And one time we had a little second grade girl come in. She had a lot of behavior problems. We were going to go swimming that day. And we had like four or five field trips, and the children got to choose which one they wanted. They couldn't go on all of them. They had to choose. We wanted them to learn to make choices. And she was going to go swimming, and she came in and she goes, oh, Miss Linda, I forgot my swim money. Bummer, huh? Yes. She knew I was going to say bummer. She was okay. She realized she couldn't go swimming. Bummer, huh? Yeah, what a bummer, Diana. She knew. So that's really an important word. Yeah, use that with your little kids, too. We use a lot. Another good phrase for children is like this, oh well. You kind of raise your shoulders, oh well. And that's all you need to say. You'll get further with that because then their mind takes over. If you go, let's say they forget their lunch money and they call you, Mom, I forgot. I just gave my children one trip a year. I would go to the school one time during the year. That was it. They got one grace period. And you can call it grace because God gives us grace. You get one grace period. I'll come to your school one time if you forget lunch money or a book. That's it. That's it. I'm not coming anymore. So let's say they forget their lunch money. And they come home from school and they've had to, at our school, they would give you a peanut butter sandwich. They'd make you starve, but you didn't get a big lunch, you know. So they come home from school. If you start in, Jordan, how many times have I told you to take your lunch money? I always put your lunch money right here, da 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 da. Jordan hadn't learned a thing from that, except now it becomes Mom's problem, not Jordan's problem anymore. As you've taken the problem by griping, complaining about it. Jordan comes home, Mom, forgot my lunch money. I knew you wouldn't bring it to me. Oh, well. What can you do next time, son? It's still Jordan's problem. You haven't taken ownership of the problem. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Do you find yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe this will help you a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, another good comment to learn is, if you do blank, then blank will happen. So, in other words, if you do not get up when your alarm goes off in the morning, then you will go to bed 15 minutes early tonight. If you have a child that can't get up in the morning, set a goal of them setting their alarm clock. Buy them an alarm clock. And I had to do this with my daughter, so because she could not get up in the morning. And I didn't have time to keep going there and waking her up. So I said, Julie, you set your alarm at a certain time. I made sure her alarm was set. Let me see if you got it set right. Yes. Okay, Julie, here's the deal. If you don't get up in the morning and I have to come get you up, you're going to bed 15 minutes earlier the next night.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. So the next night... So the next morning she couldn't get up. Okay, tonight you're going to bed 15 minutes earlier. Now, here's something else you need to know, Julie. In the morning, if you don't get up, you're going to go to bed 30 minutes earlier the next night. So she couldn't get herself up. She just get 15-minute increments. And, by the way, Julie, there'll be no radio, lights, or books when you go to bed. That means lights off. So set those boundaries and then stick by it, because then it becomes a child's problem, but you have to help them learn. And many times children just need more sleep. They can't follow boundaries. They can't follow rules because they're just too tired and they're sleep deprived. So, and one time I even said to Jill, you know what? I'll come and help you go to sleep and I'll rub your feet for you. And so that kind of became a ritual that I would rub her feet. That was a point of connection. She's 33 and every once in a while when I go see her in England, she goes, Mom, rub my feet. So it's still a point of connection for us. So use that. If you do blank, then blank's going to happen. So the child, my son was really bad to throw the garage door open. So I said, Brian, you're going to cause a hole in the wall. If you throw the door open and the wind catches something and you throw it open and you make a hole in the wall, then you will fix the hole in the wall. And it happened. One day it was windy and he threw the door open and the doorknob hit the wall and made a hole in the wall. So I said, bummer. Better figure out how you're going to fix that. Well, Mom, I don't know how to fix that. I go, well, you better talk to somebody at church or the neighbor because you're going to have to fix it. I made him fix it. I think I went and asked somebody how to do it, and so I showed him how to fix it, and we got sheetrock, and he had to plaster it, and he had to paint it and everything. He didn't do that anymore. He was careful when he came in from that point on. Something else you need to think about in your children, what is it you want for your child to be when they become an adult? We don't think about that very much. Do you want your children to be successful? Mine was, I want my children to be successful, contributing adults into society, and I want them to be happy in their lives, not always wanting for more, but happy. So you need to start right now thinking how you're going to get to that point. What are your dreams for your children? What are your plans for your children? You can't just wait till they get to be a teenager. I'll tell you one of the things that I did is I wanted my children, Julie was 12 when her dad left, and probably was about 14 I began to get myself back together again. My children both turned 18 in the summer before they went to their senior year of high school. So I wanted my children to not have a curfew after they were 18 years of age. But I couldn't wait till they turned 18 to do that. So we started working toward that when they were like 14 with ways for them to be responsible. So then when they turned 18, I said, okay, you no longer have a curfew, but here are some conditions. I have to know where you are, approximately where you are, and when you're going to come home. Because I need to know. And I'll do the same for you. I'll tell you when I'm going to be home. You leave me a note or something. So my son, senior year, he has a blind date. And comes to find out, this guy came to work and brought the blind date. This girl lived in another town. So he had told me, I'll be home about midnight tonight, Mom. So he gets close to midnight, and he calls and he goes, Mom, I'm in Sepulpa. This girl lives in Sepulpa, and I had to take her home. I said, well, when do you think you're going to be home, son? He goes, oh, probably about 30 minutes. I said, okay. Well, 30 minutes came and went, and he wasn't home. And Billy's mom called about 1 o'clock. Billy was supposed to be home at midnight. She said, what time is Brian supposed to be home? I said, well, he doesn't have a curfew, but he was supposed to be home in about 30 minutes. I'd been about 12:30. Finally, I said, I know what happened. Brian came out of Sepulpa and got on the turnpike, and he's probably in Oklahoma City now. He has no sense of direction, and Tulsa's the opposite direction. So I said, he's probably, once you get on the turnpike, you can't get off, you know. I said, I'm sure that's what happened. So anyway, he gets home about 2 o'clock, and I'm waiting up, and he goes, Mom, why are you so upset? I was worried about you, son. He goes, well, I told you I was going to be late. I said, yeah, that's 30 minutes. That was an hour and a half ago. He goes, oh, I'm sorry, Mom. I go, we'll talk about this in the morning. Step back parenting. Okay, I'm not going to have a consequence then. So next morning we get up and I think about it. I said, son, I have to tell you, there has to be a consequence. He goes, Mom, I called you. I said, you called me and said you'd be home in 30 minutes. You were an hour and a half late. Now, what happened is I couldn't sleep because I was worried about you. So there's a consequence for this. So you have a choice. You can either be grounded for 2 weeks or you can do 40 hours of community service at the Broken Arrow Clubhouse. This is just therapeutic childcare I own. You choose. You give your children choices. He goes, but Mom, that's not fair. I called and told you I was going to be late. And I go, yes, you told me it'd be about a half an hour. But son, it's not fair that I had to worry and that I didn't get any sleep last night. That's what's not fair. You need to make better plans. So you choose. You don't tell me now, but you can choose. So he chose to do the 40 hours of community service. That really set in his mind the respect he needed to have for me. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He didn't have a curfew, but he still had obligations. So start right now with what you want your children to do. And no, do you? Jordan's 10. Do you want him when he's 12 to be able to mow the yard or do the laundry or cook dinner? Those are things you need to start working on now and working with him. I had a... What time is this class in?
I'm not sure.
I think it's 4:30. Nobody's walking down the hall yet, so...
No, not yet.
Should be right there in the front. Yeah, right there. 4:15 or 4:30?
4:30.
Okay, good. Okay. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not turn from it. That's Proverbs 22:6. And I think that verse is written for single parents. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. You only have control of the child when they're in your own home. And right now, you and your ex-husband appear to be getting along pretty well. That may change if one of you has somebody else that comes into your life. I've seen the joint custody situation work great for 2-3 years until one of the partners got somebody else in their life and then everything fell apart. Because you can only guarantee what takes place in your home. And right now your ex-husband is probably working with you, but if he finds somebody and they get married, their rules are going to change. You have no control over that. So a wise Sunday school teacher said to me when my children were going to their dads and he was putting in movies they shouldn't be seeing and things like that. yeah, really bad things are going on. They were being exposed to. There's nothing you can do to control that. But you teach the children what you expect in your home. And when they're older, they will choose which direction to go. Both of my children have chosen to live moral lives, spiritual lives, contributing adults in today's society lives. I didn't believe that at first, but it's true. Project the values you want your children to have. So think about when you're training your child and ask yourself these questions. What's the direction I want him to go? What road signs and boundaries am I putting out for my child? Keep thinking about that street that was nice to follow and had signs and the one that had no boundaries on it. What am I doing to point them in the direction, right direction? How am I preparing them for bumps and detours that are going to be waiting for them? There are going to be bumps. There are going to be detours along the way. So how are you going to parent them? It's just like the shepherd. The shepherd loved the sheep. He took care of the sheep. When a sheep wandered off, remember the story? He went after, left the 99 and he went after the one that wandered off and he brought that one back. Just, I envision him carrying that little lamb on his shoulders because he cared for that. When he took them beside still waters, sheep are not smart, and if you take them to a raging river and they're thirsty, they'll just walk in and drown. Yeah. He took them beside still waters. He provided their safety for them. That's what we have to do too. In the early 90s, Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend wrote a book called Boundaries. Are you familiar with the Boundaries series?
For the adults?
Mm-hmm.
I have that. I'm in the process of reading.
Oh, good, good. Well, you'll recognize a lot of this. These are some things they learned in Boundaries. These are adults now that didn't have boundaries as children, okay? They have an inability to say no to hurtful people or set limits for hurtful behaviors. They have an inability to say no to their own destructive impulses. They have an inability to hear no from others and respect limits and tasks. That one right there, we have so many teenagers that cannot intake no from others or follow rules. Teenagers' brains are going through so much that they actually seek novelty. And they actually seek dangerous situations. That's what the teens do. But they still need boundaries. Driving a car is a big one. Cell phones, changing the radio station. One thing I said to my daughter when she got her driver's license, she couldn't have anybody in the car unless I approved it first. Because they get too busy talking to each other. So she just didn't get the car keys. If there was something happened, if this is what happens, then you don't get the car keys for a week. You're grounded from it. Tendency to be attracted to irresponsible and hurtful people, and they always want to try to fix that other person. That's because they had no boundaries. Taking responsibility for other people's lives. As children, they were easily controlled or manipulated. Adults struggle with intimacy and maintaining closeness with others. They have an inability to be honest with those who are close to them. You can read through all. They're disorganized, they have a lack of follow-through, and they have addictions and compulsions, and they become addicted to substance abuse. When your children are adults, what character traits and qualities do you want them to possess? Do you want them to be healthy, happy, contributing adults in today's society? There's some ways we can do this. One way is teaching the children. And we earlier said children are not born knowing right from wrong. We have to teach them. Mm-hmm. Single parents is even tougher because, again, you have the influence of somebody else over here who maybe lets them do what they want to do. So when they come back to your home, almost sometimes you have to reteach them again and again and again. Modeling. Children, one expert said that children do 80% of what they see, what's modeled before them, and only 20% of what they're told. That's pretty scary. You know this from working in preschool. They model their parents.
Exactly.
I had one little four-year-old come in one time, went to the home living center, kicked this little boy out of the chair, sit down in the chair, put his little feet up on the table, and he goes, "Woman, bring me a beer." 4 years old.
He saw it at home.
He saw it at home. Or he saw it on a movie, which means many children learn their moral values from TV now. So, model. And I always knew what kind of teachers I'd hired, but how my children acted. As a preschool teacher, you know what's going on in the home because they'll act out in the home with the blocks, home living, Play-Doh, sand play, guns. Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. One little girl, friend's childcare, took a pencil or a pen and she drew lines all up and down her arms. You know what that was? Mom's using drugs. And that was the lines, just like her arm looked just like her mama's arm. So, model. As children get older, the patterns set in the brain will reap what's been modeled before them. I hear my words coming out of my grandchildren's mouths.
Isn't that awesome?
It is awesome. I was over there last year. He was 6, and his little brother's 2. This is the coolest story. Because I believe in giving children a lot of choices. So, their ritual was Gage is 6, Gabriel's 2. So Gage was in T-ball. So when they got to the T-ball thing, Gage carried the bat bag and Gabriel always walked beside him. But coming back, as soon as Gage comes around the corner, he hands Gabriel the bat. Well, Gabriel had a ball he played with while his brothers. But he hands Gabriel the bat and Gabriel drags the bat to the car. Julie goes, Mom, this is their ritual. So here Gabriel drives the bat to the car. And they get to the car and Gage goes, Gabriel, you know the rules. The bat goes in the bag. And Gabriel goes, no, mine. And Gage goes, Gabriel, the bat goes in the bag. You know that's the safest thing. Put the bat in the bag. And I look at Julie and she goes, just listen, Mom. So I'm in the front seat. Gabriel goes, mine. And Gage goes, Gabriel, would you like a ball? No. Would you like a glove? No, because he's looking funny. He goes, bet, mine. Gage goes, now Gabriel, you have a choice. You can have the ball, or you can have the glove, or nothing. What do you choose? And Gabriel turns his head to the window, and Gage goes, oh, I see you've chosen nothing. Well, okay then. He takes the bat, puts it in the back, and zips it up. He turns, he looks his head out this way, and we go on with our lives. And I said, I'm overwhelmed. I go, Julie, that was incredible. She goes, Mother, where do you think he learned that from? And after 9/11, Gage had to come live with me because both parents were in the military and I was a dependent care person. So he had to come live with me. And I gave him a lot of choices. And so not only, I mean, he heard that from living with me, but I hear my words that's been said to Julie that are now coming out of his mouth. At 9/11, this is a good example. I didn't realize it, but when I was growing up, my dad, when we were driving the driveway, would always say, home again, rig-a-jig-jig. Every time we drove, especially after, every time we drove in the right driveway, my dad said that. Not realizing it, I said that to my own children. So I go pick up Gage. I drive 5 hours from where they were back to my home. I think this little two-year-old is asleep in my car, and I pull in the driveway, and in the back seat, I hear this little, home again, rig-a-jig-jig. She had taught that ritual to Gage. So from my father to me to my daughter to my grandson, we all say home again, we can just think it's so silly. But that's a ritual that's been carried. Now when Gage gets older, I'll tell him that his great-grandpa, that came from his great-grandpa. But do you see what we're modeling for our children? Little tiny things are so important. And then help your children internalize their boundaries. And if you've got the boundaries book somewhere in that, I don't know what page number it says, to internalize something is to make it a part of yourself. You have to allow children to internalize the boundaries that are set before them. So many times they'll have to suffer a consequence. And like I said, consequences can be good. They have to internalize the boundaries. Now, some suggestions for single parents is pick your battles.
I do.
Good. You don't have enough time to do every battle.
Tell my parents that. Pick your battles.
My children, one battle I opted not to fight was the battle of their bedrooms. I'm a real organized person, and I couldn't stand their bedrooms being messy. But I was driving myself crazy trying to keep their bedrooms organized. So here's what I did. I go, you guys, I can't handle your bedrooms like that, but evidently that's what you feel comfortable in. So here's the deal. The rest of the house stays clean. And if your bedrooms are a mess, that's up to you. But just know you'll be deprived of my company in your bedroom. I cannot come in your bedroom when it's a mess like that. And I didn't know how this affected my children. My daughter was older. And she goes, you know what, Mom? What used to embarrass me so bad? And I go, what? And she said, when Grandma would come to our house, one time she came to our house, and you didn't know she was coming. You go, oh, Mom, come in. You go, just a moment. And you very carefully walked up the stairs and very methodically closed my bedroom door. And he went back downstairs again. And I go, and what did you need to do so Grandma could come in your room? She goes, clean my room.
That would traumatize mine if I said I couldn't go in their room to kiss them goodnight or anything like that.
You do it at the door. If they want your presence, then they have to clean their room. Mm-hmm. Well, you have, but you might need to take, here's a suggestion I have. Help them clean out the room the way you want it, more or less want it, and then take some pictures and put it up so they have a guide to follow. Because the little kids' minds work so fast, they don't remember what you said to do. So take some pictures or make a list, and this is how your room needs to look. It doesn't have to be perfect, but, you know, at least it'd be a pathway to the bed.
So I don't step on toys.
Well, see, you are the safe keeper. Remember that, and you have to keep things safe. And toys being on the floor is not safe for mom's feet. So that's a good rule to follow. You're going to do so good when you go back. All right, pick your battles. Take your time. God gives us the gift of time. For some reason, as a single parent, we think we have to have an answer every time, right on the spot, right on the moment, but you don't. And as you train your children, that's what you're doing. When my children got into their teen years, I said, you have to ask me at least 24 hours in advance so I can think about things. Because I respect you and I love you so much, I want to be fair to you. But if you don't ask me in advance, I'm not going to be fair. I'll just give you an off-the-top-of-my-head answer. So to be fair, I need to think through the issues. And my children learn. Now, Mom, just take about 3 days and think about this, but this is what's happening. So they, in turn, that taught them to plan in advance and to have all the answers to the questions that they knew I would ask. I can't tell you how important the gift of time is to you. Pray through each situation. Pray without ceasing. Pray with your children. You know, I had to learn. I thought you prayed and you had this quiet time, but I had to learn. I still do this day. You can pray all the time. You can pray putting the clothes in the laundry. You can pray drying. You can pray when you're fixing dinner. You can pray when you're washing, looking out the window. You pray when you're getting in the car. You pray all the time without ceasing. That's an intimate relationship. Now, and be prepared in advance to deal with some of these things. Sleepovers. Have you had to deal with sleepovers yet? Okay, so you've already crossed that point. I always tell people get a phone number, especially when they become teens. And my children could not spend the night anywhere where I had not talked to the adult in that home, even when they were 16, 17, 18. That was just a rule. It had to happen that way. My great nephew came to live with me, which is a whole other story, whenever he was 15. And it had ditched 40 days of school the first semester. It was going to be put in juvenile detention. So the judge let him come live with me. And that was one of the things I said, you have to notify me in advance when you want to do something. But I have to talk to any friend you make. I have to talk to the parent. He goes, well, that's embarrassing. We have a choice. If you want to spend the night, I talk to him. If not, you don't go. That's all there is to it. And I don't want any kids to spend the night in my home until I've talked to the parent. And you'd be amazed at the parents that didn't have a clue. You want to what? You want to talk to me? Why? Well, because your child's going to come spend the night in my house.
I'm selective as who comes to my house.
Good for you.
And where he goes. He's only been to two friends.
Good.
Because I don't like the influence of the others.
That's right.
And he knows that. He knows why.
And now with video games and DVDs and cable television, they'll be introduced to a lot of things you don't want them introduced to. So good for you. Dating. How are you going to handle dating? Jordan's only...
I won't see it.
They're not going to date?
They're not going to see it. Well, I thought you were talking about me.
Oh, personally. No. The kids.
The kids...
He's 10.
I'm just going to say when we get there.
You need to start thinking in advance, like, how are you going to handle it when the little girls start calling him? Is it okay for them to call any time of day or not?
It's 9.
Then, you need to start preparing for that and be ready. When my children started dating, when my daughter started dating, what I did was I called all of our church friends to find out their dating rules. All different. She goes, Mom, that's embarrassing. I go, do you want me to be fair to you or not? I'm a single mom. What if I make my rules way stronger than your friends? I need to know. That was one reason. The other reason was when she said, well, everybody gets to, I'd go, oh, no, see, the Joneses don't and the Smiths don't and the Robinsons, because I would know what they did. And that happened a couple of, well, everybody's going, I said, I don't think so, Julie. I asked my notes, and I know the Robinsons don't want to let Kara do that. So I call, and I got all their dating rules. And I tell them, I go, I'm a single mom, you know that. Julie's going to start dating, and I need rules. And I wrote them all down.
I'm a son. I have no male influence.
That's exactly right. I wrote them down, and then I sat down with Julie, and I go, these are the other people's rules, and we're going to make our rules from this. And then we wrote them down. What rules we had.
Cool.
And they changed. The rules will change as you get older, but right now. So one of the things was she couldn't go on a car date until she was 15 and a half. And that had to be with another couple. She couldn't go alone. She could go in a group. Okay? She couldn't go on a car date with a boy by herself until she was 16. Well, in February, she would be like 15 and a half, so she could go with on a car date. So when November came, on October she came, she goes, Mom, can I go to this dance with this such and such kid? He had his driver's license. And I said, Why would you even ask me that, Julie? You know my rule, 15 and a half. She goes, well, Mom, it's just a special dance. I said, no, I'm sorry, I can't approve of that. She came back 2 weeks later, and she goes, I'm going to go to that dance. I said, Julie, you're not. She goes, Mother, that's Dad's weekend, and I'm going there. Anything you can do about it? And she was right. There wasn't anything I could do about it. I said, I'm going to think about this. She goes, it doesn't make any difference, anything you can do about it, because it's Dad's weekend, and he said, I can go. Well, his dad would say that just if he knew I didn't want her to go. But anyway, so I prayed about it and I thought about it and I went back and I said, Julie, you know what? You're exactly right. Is there anything I can do about it? However, you know that I don't agree with this and I will not take part in this at all. I will not buy you a dress. I will not help you in any way because you're going against my wishes. No shoes, nothing. It's up to you. Her Sunday school teacher came to me and said, you're not being fair to Julie. I said, I'm a single mom. I'm doing the best I can do. She goes, well, I'm going to give Julie a formal. I said, please don't do that. No, I'm going to give her a formal because I think she should go. So Julie comes. She goes, my Sunday school teacher's giving me a formal. Will you take it to the cleaners and get clean? I said, Julie, I'm not taking any part of this. So our neighbor down the street, she said, you're not being fair to Julie. I'm going to take this dress to cleaners. So she took the dress to cleaners for her. Julie's new stepmom took her shopping, and she bought her a jacket to wear, and she bought her shoes and purse to match, satin shoes and purse to match. I mean, everybody, I was beginning to think I was in the wrong. But I kept, no, for God, I prayed about this. This is what I think God wants me to do. These are my boundaries. These are my rules. I'm going to stick by them. And it was so hard because everybody was telling me I was wrong. All right? And our neighbor had a daughter same age as Julie did. So came the weekend for the dance, and the neighbor's daughter came over, and she was going to go spend the night at Julie's dad's. And they were giggling, and they were talking, and she was getting all her stuff, and she was all excited, and I was really feeling left out of the picture. And she goes, bye, Mom, I'll see you. I couldn't even say have a good time. I could not take part in this, because she was going against my wishes as a mother. So, boy, the next day was hard. I just prayed, and I... am I right? Am I wrong? Is this, am I too strict? And you go through all those questions, you know, but for some reason I just felt like I need to really hold to that. So she came home and I didn't ask her how it went or anything. Years go by, okay? She has her first child. We're sitting up one night with the baby, Gage, and we're talking. She goes, Mom, you want to know what the most unhappy night has ever been in my life? And I thought she was saying her dad left or when she woke up with a boyfriend or something. She goes, so what? She goes, that night that I went on that dance and I knew you didn't want me to be there and I didn't have a good time. I had the worst time of my whole life. And you know what? The guy I went with didn't have a good time either because I was so miserable. Because I knew you were sitting at home and you wanted to take part in my first day and I robbed you of that. Then I knew, after all those years, I knew why I did what I did, that God led me in that. And I praise the Lord that we had that relationship. I set boundaries for my children. And there are times that everybody thought I was wrong. But you have to do what you have to do for your children. Now, my single parent friends didn't think I was wrong. Not everybody, I said that wrong. My single parent friends, they were supportive of me. I also learned that some of the two parent their children were not nearly as functional or emotionally healthy as my children are to this day. So, prepare for these things. My children had to work. They had to budget their money. They had to budget their time. We started when they were very young. I put them on TV, electronic budget. They only got 5 hours a week, Monday through Friday. They could watch TV or play electronic games. We didn't have a computer at the time. They had to learn to budget their time and what they wanted to watch. My son graduated from high school. He was in college, junior college, and one Saturday afternoon, there's a knock at the door, and I go, and here's one of Brian's friends standing here, and I go, Robbie, Brian's not here. What are you doing? He just opened the door and comes in and goes, I just wanted to visit with you for a while. Okay. I'm making cookies. Come on in. So I'm not going to stop. He goes, no, man. He gets his bar stool and pulls up to the bar and we're talking. He goes, the reason I want to come talk to you is because, you know, I watched Brian all these years and you taught Brian how to organize his time and how to budget his money. And my parents didn't teach me that. And here I am in college and I don't know how to do those things. my goodness, this is coming from a college kid looking at me. I never knew the kid. I thought the kid thought I was always too strict or something. So pick your battles, go to the Lord, prepare in advance, pray through situations, know in advance what you want to do. Discipline and communication. Proverbs 25:11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a silver setting. And I would encourage you to memorize that. 2 Thessalonians 3:10, for even when we are with you, we gave you this rule, if a man will not work, he shall not eat. And I use that for my kids all the time. If you don't work, you don't eat. This is what we're going to do. Saturday mornings, we'd get up and I go, here's the list of chores. Pick what you want to do and I'll pick what I want to do. So they were working, but they got to make some choices. Choices empower children. Empower children to think for themselves. Give them choices. Allow them to suffer and be responsible for their actions. And don't rescue your children. Children need to have some control over their lives. You're the shepherd. You're shepherding your children. John 10:27 says, my sheep hear my voice. My sheep listen to my voice. I hear them and they know me. They know me. You know your children. Parenting is a lifelong thing that's going to take place. Your kids are 5 and 10. Follow God's design. That's all. It's simple. Follow God's design. Be the shepherd, just like in the 23rd Psalms. Safety, provide for them, provide for their needs, and they'll love you back for it. But more than that, you're going to be creating children. You're going to be helping children grow into the adults you want them to be. My daughter's a wonderful mother now. Oh, she's the best mom. My son is a good dad. He's good at his job. Everybody that talks to him, wanting him to come to their hospital. My daughter, she has all kinds of accolades and awards and honors in the Air Force. Never, ever dreamed that we would come that far, but we have. And they still call me. To this day, they call and we'll pray over the telephone. To this day, they're adults. They're adults. But they still seek my advice. I never give it to them. I go, you know, Brian, I can't make that decision for you. I know, Mom, it just talked me through it. Let's pray about it. So we'll pray about it. And you can do it.
Yes, I can. I'm doing it.
You're doing it. That's something else. I forgot to tell you this. Don't use the words good boy, good job with your children. Use the words you're
awesome.
Doing it. No, awesome. But you're doing it. Those other things are an adult's judgment. So the words you're doing, you merely describe what they're doing. Look at you. You picked up you put the paper up on the floor. That was helpful. You did it. And you describe what they did. That'll send them further in their self-esteem than anything else. Not praise, but just telling them what they did. Thank you. You picked up the toys in your bedroom so I wouldn't hurt my foot. You did it. You describe, you did it. And that feels good inside their body.